This is the Infotagem podcast, the vaccine to the disinformation virus. The role of social media in this US presidential election has received more scrutiny than ever before. This is finding more evidence of campaigns to suppress voting, undermine confidence in the election by suggesting there will be large-scale voter fraud, as well as foreign interference. Facebook claims to have introduced new tools and policies since 2016 to make campaigning on their platform more transparent and to act against known sources of disinformation and inauthentic activity. But is this really what's going on? I'm Damian Collins, and for this podcast, I'll be discussing these issues with Laura Edelson, who is the lead researcher on the Online Political Ads Transparency Project at the New York University Tandon School of Engineering, and our resident disinformation analyst, Dr. Charles Creel, whose new film, People You May Know, investigates social media advertising in the 2016 presidential election. Laura, it's fantastic to have you with us on the podcast. We're recording this, I should say, on Friday the 30th of October, so just before the US presidential election. I think unlike 4 years ago, there's been an immense amount of scrutiny and focus on the social media advertising campaign in this election. And whilst we may not have seen all the reforms to political advertising on social media we might like to have seen over the last 4 years, there are certainly a lot more people looking now for bad things that appear in those ads. And one of the most interesting projects has been the project that you helped lead, Laura, at New York University on online political ad transparency. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about the work you've been doing.
Absolutely. So I think, like a lot of folks, we got interested in this line of work after, you know, what we all saw happened in the 2016 US presidential election. I think as a computer scientist, as someone who works in cybersecurity, I saw a massive social, you know, cybersecurity vulnerability that was being exploited. So when the Facebook ad library launched in 2018, I was very keen to work with that data set. We'd gotten started with the data dump that came out of the initial congressional hearings, and we found some really interesting stuff was visible in the ads and in the ad targetings. So when the ad library launched, we were one of the first groups to really dig into that data and try to understand just how political advertising in social media works. And so a lot of our early work was just aimed at trying to figure out how normal campaigns and advertisers behave in that space, mostly so we could get to the point where we could find the really bad stuff, the misinformation and problematic content. And developing tools and methods to do that has been our focus for the last 2 years.
And I mean, the campaign itself over the last few months has sort of gathered intensity. What impression has the creative work in those ads made on you so far? I mean, do you think this is just as aggressive or even more so than it was 4 years ago?
Is PTSD a valid answer? So I think that one of my takeaways, having monitored this election, and you know, it's not over yet, but we've certainly seen a lot, is that in 2016, the Russian IRA executed this campaign to polarize the electorate, to discredit the system as a whole. And we'll never know if the ads that they ran on Facebook and other, you know, work through other channels actually swung the election. But if their goal was to discourage people from believing in the power of democracy, to discourage the electorate, well, that was certainly successful. We can see that trust in our systems, in the election as a whole, has declined. So I think one of the things that I wasn't expecting going into this election was that so many political advertisers would look at what was done in 2016 and just decide that this is a good idea, that it was effective, and maybe we should try it too. What we've actually been seeing is that these tactics of enraging and disaffecting and polarizing, it's no longer just a matter of finding the one or two bad actors and taking those folks out. This is a tactic that's been adopted by, you know, pretty widely by domestic actors as well. And we are seeing so many of these groups pop up that are very good at, sometimes we call it policy evasion, just staying exactly this side of the line of what Facebook bans, and knowing how to you know, sort of work the rules to run content that they would never be able to run on TV or through other traditional news sources because they would just be rejected. But they are using that to, often for their own ends, maybe to get people to get a subscription or to watch their YouTube videos. But the net effect is really, really negative.
It's a couple of interesting things, I think, come out of that. Things that we looked at a little bit when we did the Digital Culture, Media and Sports Select Committee inquiry on disinformation. One's the role of these sort of shadowy campaign groups. Now, I suppose America has a tradition of these sort of political action committees campaigning on behalf, you know, in support of candidates. But it's quite easy on social media to spend, say, quite a lot of money on Facebook promoting an idea or a policy that clearly benefits one candidate over another, or attacking a policy that clearly benefits one candidate over another. But yet we don't really know who's behind it. And even in the UK, the Information Commissioner, Elizabeth Denham, has said that when they've investigated some of these campaigns, it's quite, even with Facebook's new policies on ad transparency, it can be quite difficult to find out who's ultimately behind this work.
Yeah, so this is such a fascinating area, because a really big piece of what we do is work to link ads and their disclosure strings to groups that might be actually behind those disclosure strings. And it's such a puzzle. I actually had to sit down with a lawyer at the NYU Law School to have him explain all this campaign law stuff to me. But I think a lot of what we're seeing is just that our regulation, of which we do have a little bit in the US, just has not kept up as online platforms have evolved. So the real gaping loophole here is that you do not have to be a PAC to run political ads. Now, this is true for any platform. You can run political ads on TV as anyone you'd like. But if you run a TV ad, the FCC will report that political ad in an FCC database. If you run radio ads, there's something similar. However, Facebook is not mandated to report any data at all. They've voluntarily taken some disclosure steps, and we think that's great. But the disclosure strings that they publish that theoretically are supposed to tell the viewer who paid for this ad are often extremely opaque. And there's no other source of that data as there would be if that ad was being run by a PAC. So frankly, what we're seeing is a lot of ads that are run by LLCs that we have virtually no visibility into at all.
Absolutely. And I mean, Facebook have introduced new policies for this election period after a bit of pressure. And I think particularly pressure on Mark Zuckerberg's statements that he didn't feel Facebook should intervene or make judgments on political content, political advertising content. I mean, you said earlier on, you talked about people doing things that stay just the right line of being banned by Facebook. I mean, in what circumstances have you seen Facebook being prepared to ban or remove political ads?
I report a lot of ads to Facebook and they have policies that will get things removed. But in my experience, the way that those policies are enforced are tilted heavily toward the side of the advertiser. This is a balance, and I fully admit there's sort of a range in how you could approach this. Facebook very much takes the approach that if something's going to get taken down, it needs to be absolutely ironclad. And so just to give you an example of how this works and why the balance is so strongly toward the advertiser in terms of enforcement, Facebook has a policy that bans, just false news or fabrication from political ads, with the exception of candidates. But other political advertisers, they shouldn't be making claims that are factually incorrect in their ads. Now, you can think of a wide range of ways to actually enforce this. But in practice, the way this actually plays out when you try to report things that are factually incorrect is you need to have a fact check against the exact wording that is in the ad, or a fact check of the exact link that the ad links to. If it is a link to a page that has identical content but is just hosted elsewhere, that will not get it taken down. If you have a fact check of the same claim but that one that uses slightly different wording, that will not get taken down. So there are ways that that policy could simply be enforced differently that would prioritize the user and prioritize the user's interest in not being shown false information slightly higher. But that's just not how Facebook has chosen to enforce that policy.
Now Facebook announced that it was going to said it was going to ban new political ads running in the last week of the presidential campaign, which I think gave the impression that there wouldn't be any political ads in the last week of the campaign. Now, it's not quite as straightforward as that. Perhaps you could tell us how this is working in practice.
Oh boy, okay, this is a complicated one. So what Facebook actually banned, and what I think has not always been well communicated, is they banned new ad creatives from being launched after that October 27th cutoff. So what this meant is campaigns were not in any way restricted on spending in this last week, but any ad image or image and text combination had to have run and had to have had at least one impression before that cutoff date. And the goal here was not to reduce political spending in this last week or reduce the number of political ads in the system. The goal was to make sure that folks like me, that folks like the other teams that I work with that look for misinformation and problematic content, and Facebook's own internal teams, that they would have at least a week before Election Day to find the worst misinformation, the worst problematic content that does regularly slip through.
And it would seem that it would be still relatively easy to have preloaded lots of ads, some of which may be problematic that Facebook haven't got around to looking at, or are disputable and therefore difficult to remove. And those ads could still play a big role in the last few days of the campaign.
Yes, and we certainly saw lots of ads being preloaded. I actually recently did an analysis of this just to look at, did Donald Trump, did Joe Biden preload ads? And the way that we did this is we just looked at ads that our system classifies as being sort of get out the vote ads. And then we looked at spend on ads over the last few weeks, and then also at just raw number of ads. And we saw that last week, spend was relatively flat, but the number of ads that were loaded into the system, the number of ad creatives, was much higher. It spiked quite a bit. So the only reasonable conclusion that I think we can draw at this point is that it looks like they were preloading ads. Of course, we won't really know this until we see how this week plays out.
But we'd probably expect this week to be one of the biggest spend weeks. I mean, when we looked at Cambridge Analytica, is regardless of how effective people think Cambridge Analytica were at ad targeting, they clearly saw what they did on the basis of creating differential turnout, for which advertising in the 48 hours leading up to the poll itself is crucial.
Absolutely. And again, we have absolutely no evidence that psychographic ad targeting is effective. But I think what we do have some evidence of now is that campaigns are using it. And we also do, so maybe I should explain a bit about how we collect data. Yeah. So our primary source of data is Facebook itself. We take quite a bit of data from the Facebook Ad Library API. That's where we get almost everything we use and show. But we have a second source of data as well. We also have a browser extension called Ad Observer that lets people who install this extension and use Facebook, it lets them share ads that they've seen on Facebook back with us. And what's really helpful about that is as part of that ad that they're shown, there's also a targeting explanation that tells them why they were shown that ad. And at this point we have I think as of yesterday, we have almost 14,000 users. And those users, when they contribute their ads, when they contribute their ad targeting, they help us build a fuller picture of of how ad targeting works. So we are definitely seeing what appear to be psychographic targetings, where campaigns are targeting people based on completely apolitical interests, like TV shows they might like, whether they like The Simpsons, things like that, that are this kind of psychographic targeting that people got so concerned about before.
And I mean, that's absolutely, I mean, it's really fascinating. And I think, you know, you can have an incredible set of data that you could work with and hopefully share the results of that work. And looking at the ads you're seeing based on that sort of targeting, is that both ad promoting candidates, but does that include what might be called voter suppression ads as well?
So we're not political scientists, we're computer scientists. So I hesitate to call any one specific ad voter suppression. But one thing that we do that I think is sort of adjacent to the question you're asking is, you know, sort of along our data pipeline, we classify ads by topic. We do this largely so we can get a feel for how much campaigns are spending on different topics, how they're messaging. But one of the things that we've been able to observe because we do this is we can look at just the set of ads that we call them, that they are the ads about democratic norms. So these are the ads that are about our system as a whole, about democracy, about whether elections will be fair rather than any one specific election. And what we found when we looked at those specific ads, and we additionally do a sentiment analysis of those ads, again, as a class, is that this topic has gone pretty strongly negative during this campaign. I have to tell you, we set up this topic a long time ago. It was sort of part of our broad categories that we built back in 2019. And it is quite recent that this topic went negative. This is not the way people normally talk about democracy as a whole. And that is one of, honestly, the things that I am most concerned about going through this election.
Well, and by that, do you mean sort of people suggesting that there's no point voting, or that the election will be rigged, or something bad will happen and therefore don't take part?
Yes. So these are often, again, when I'm talking here about the negative ads about democratic norms, these are often ads that suggest that the election will be rigged. As you said, that maybe there's no point in voting. There are others as well that are less voting related. This also captures ads that say things like, the left-wing mob is coming for you, or, you know, are you getting ready for a civil war? They also capture that kind of overall negative sentiment about, you know, whether democracy itself can stand.
Yeah. Now, it would strike me that this is an incredibly important piece of work that you're doing for society, but Facebook don't think so, do they? They're trying to close you down.
Facebook did send me a cease and desist letter about 2 weeks ago. And we do think that's incredibly unfortunate, because we certainly believe in the work we're doing. But more importantly, we think that the public have a right to know how political advertisers are targeting ads. We think there's a strong public interest, and we will not be complying with the cease and desist. And we're going to continue to publish our political ad data.
And their objection is that you're effectively holding user data, but this is data about ads that Facebook users have shared with you because they want you to see it.
That's right. And I just want to clear something up, because I think that not everyone is aware of exactly how our browser extension works, but our browser extension sort of rides along passively as other browser extensions like password managers do. And when you're shown an ad on Facebook, what we do is we just pull that ad itself and the ad targeting explanation. And we're always very careful to make sure that we don't, you know, if the targeting explanation contains something that might be personally identifying, we leave it out. We don't take it. We're really not interested in anything about the user themselves. What we're interested in is the ads. And we really try to be very, very careful to never, ever collect any personal or private information.
So the only information you're really interested in is the information that would have been used to target the ad in the first place, not personal information about the individual that received it.
Exactly. So we would never say, take a user's email address or anything about, you know, where their computer is located. But if the ad targeting explanation says we targeted this ad to people interested in dogs, that is the only thing that we would take. And we don't record any installation ID or user ID, so we can't even tie two ads together.
And it's fascinating that Facebook have taken this view, because supposedly the ad library was there to create transparency. But when, you know, a team like yours works with that data to analyze it, they object.
I think it's really unfortunate. To be honest, we shouldn't have to do this. Facebook should be making ad targeting transparent themselves. I really, really believe that the public have a right to know how political advertisers are targeting their ads. And the fact that they don't makes it really hard to have trust in our political system and in Facebook itself.
Absolutely.
And I think
I think it's, but I think it also underlines as well, and as you said, I mean, there are different regulations in America that the FCC apply for TV advertising that don't apply online. In the UK, we don't have broadcast advertising on television for politics, but there are different rules that apply for print advertising in the UK that don't apply online. And I think actually we shouldn't be leaving these decisions to Mark Zuckerberg. We should be, you know, setting in electoral law the requirements that should exist so that this sort of information is transparent and readily available.
Yes. I mean, I think that political communication, political advertising is just an integral part of elections in free societies and democracies. And the idea that the public doesn't have an interest in having transparency and accountability in public advertising, I think that that's frankly a silly one. So, and we know this because we have had longstanding regulations in political advertising in other domains and in making sure that the public can have some transparency of political advertising. And of course, we would want to have the same thing in the digital realm. And Mark Zuckerberg has supported that stance. We just need to get it done.
Absolutely. Well, I'd like to bring in Charles Creel, who's been listening in to our conversation. And Charles, you're joining us again from Fairhope, Alabama.
I am. I'm in Fairhope, Alabama, where we've just had our third hurricane in about 6 weeks. I'm really interested in the conversation that's happening. And I just a couple of questions for you. First of all, down here in Alabama, like the pro Blue Lives Matter a flag, the thin blue line flag, has become almost like the new Confederate flag. And I see it flying in a lot of different places. What happens with ads that may have content that does something as benign as encouraging people to go vote, but then has these kinds of banners in the background that signal that really we're encouraging you to go vote for a particular way? Do those ads get scrutinized?
So that's a tough question, because there is a difference between policy and execution here. Mm-hmm. So in general, if an ad mentions voting, or if it mentions a social issue like Blue Lives Matter, either of those things would get that ad classed as political. And we see a lot of content like that in the political ad library. However, we also know that a lot of it slips through the cracks. We do know that Facebook's enforcement is not perfect. And in fact, it does appear to be inconsistent in some ways. So in general, those things are supposed to be in the ad library. We certainly see a lot of that content in the ad library. But we do know, because of ads that have been observed by our browser extension users, that not all of those ads are properly disclosed, and not all of those ads are even ever caught by Facebook. So that's where it gets complicated. And that's where, again, we really do need more visibility into ads that Facebook has not classed as political, because we know that Facebook isn't always getting it right.
Right. And what is the benefit? I mean, one of the things that I struggle to understand with Facebook from a meta level is that certainly political advertising can't be that much money compared to all the other kinds of advertising that happen on Facebook. So what is the benefit to Facebook of being so obstinate about this particular subject, even when we're getting some cooperation from some of the other big data brokers?
Well, I'm not Facebook, and it's difficult for me to speak to their motivations. But I would sort of mention two observations. You say that it's not that political advertising is not a substantial portion of the overall advertising picture. And Facebook doesn't tell us what portion of ads on its site are political or on social issues. But I think we do know that during this election, at minimum, hundreds of millions of dollars have been spent, however you define the campaign period. Up to this point, billions of dollars have been spent on political ads that Facebook has told us about. If you're a publicly traded company in the United States, you're obligated to put the interest of your shareholder first. And so to say that Facebook could or would want to walk away from billions of dollars of revenue is, I think, a really difficult jump to make. I think in addition to that, there are certainly many executives at Facebook, and Mark Zuckerberg himself have talked about the extreme deference to advertisers and their right to be wrong. And to a certain extent, I think something else that people often forget is Facebook's customers are not its users. Facebook's customers are its advertisers. And I think it's just really hard to think that a business is not going to put the interests of its customers first. Frankly, that's what they are supposed to be doing. That's what they're incentivized to do.
I think you're right. I think it's a really crystal clear definition of the fact that Facebook's customers are not its users, but its advertisers, because it is, as we talked about on the podcast before, it is principally an ad business. And
I believe it's something like 97% of Facebook's revenues come from advertising. And this is, frankly, where I think regulation will eventually be needed. Facebook itself has said that they welcome regulation in this space, because I think we're getting into a situation where Facebook's very natural interests in serving the needs of their customers, who are advertisers, are occasionally going to be at odds with society's overall interest in not being fed a bunch of misinformation. And that is just a natural misalignment of incentives that sometimes government regulation is needed to address.
And Laura, do we have any overview of what happens with organic advertising? And by that, what I mean is where people aren't directly buying ads, but there's enormous spend in organization of getting messaging out through means other than ads. Is there any oversight on that at all?
Oh boy, this is a tough one. Okay. So this is something that I think I and a lot of other folks in the US first started getting some concern about in February of this year, because that is when we first saw that Mike Bloomberg in the Democratic primary race was paying influencers to promote his campaign and his content. And Facebook scrambled to do something to properly disclose this. And what we have at this point are we have some public dashboards that are using Facebook's CrowdTangle tool, where you can see organic paid content. So ads that Facebook classes as organic content, but they are ads that are being run by political groups. The problem is that this dashboard is just such a tiny, this dashboard covers such a tiny amount of the overall organic paid content space on Facebook. And we still don't know how much is spent in this area. There's no transparency of that at all. And for those of us that try to access data programmatically from CrowdTangle, these kind of paid partnerships aren't flagged. So yes, you can see it through the dashboard, but I can't integrate that into my other data flows, and I have no visibility into how much was spent. And it's a really big problem because I know that I've got a blind spot over there, but there's nothing I can really do to solve it without Facebook making a lot more information transparent.
And isn't there something just really inherently problematic that Facebook is providing researchers a tool to monitor Facebook, but it's a Facebook tool, and so it has limitations built into it from the start? And I talk about CrowdTangle.
Yeah, I think with CrowdTangle, and frankly with a lot of other Facebook's research initiatives, we frankly think their posture is wrong. Facebook often sets up access to data for researchers in ways that are extremely closed. CrowdTangle is very difficult to get access to. It is not publicly accessible. There are other research initiatives like the Election Integrity Program. They're great, but they are not widely open. In order to be involved in those projects, you have to be vetted by Facebook. And the researchers who are involved in those projects are fabulous. I know many of them. They are dedicated, independent researchers who are doing great work. But the problem is that we need so many more hands on deck to solve this problem than we currently have. And the idea that only Facebook vetted researchers should have access to what should be public information about political advertising, it's, you know, we are fighting a pretty hard battle here against misinformation, against content that would tear down our democratic system as a whole. And the idea that only Facebook alone could solve it and that they aren't going to give outside researchers access, we're fighting with one hand behind our back.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think sometimes of political advertising in its traditional sense of, you know, a newspaper advert or television advert, which it appears for a certain fixed period of time and is there to try and influence what people think at the moment they see it, and make them think about an issue in a different way. I think with social media, why it's understanding what's going on is so important is it's less about one individual execution, but the flooding of the zone of information with hyper-partisan content, disinformation, some political advertising as well. And it's that total experience on an individual that's difficult to quantify. But I think we should be able to see who's doing it and where that information is coming from.
Yeah, and can I throw in misrepresented authorship as another really big problem? I think one thing that we've seen a lot of in this cycle, and something that was frankly really foreseeable, are you aware that in 2019, Facebook made a carve out from their disclosure and transparency requirements for news publishers?
Yeah. So, what do you mean by carve out?
So, news publishers are exempted from Facebook's both their disclosure requirements to users and their transparency requirements for other political advertisers for news publishers. And at first blush, this kind of makes sense. There are great, credible news publishers who simply report on the news and they want to run Facebook ads for popular stories. So their ads were getting that paid for by disclosure because they met the criteria for inclusion. And news publishers thought that they shouldn't be held to the same kind of disclosure requirements. So in April of 2019, Facebook created this exemption for news publishers. The problem was, as a cybersecurity person, I can tell you that that was a loophole you could drive a truck through. What happened after they set up that loophole is partisan actors, PACs, and other partisan groups set up quote-unquote newsrooms where they could, you know, they set up a quote-unquote news website that meets the book definition that Facebook has of a news publisher, which I mean they publish content about news events that has original writing, that has bylines and dates. And there are quite a few advertisers who have obtained this news exemption who are not traditional news providers. They are partisan news providers. And unfortunately, this is, in a cybersecurity sense, this is a trust attack on users. Users have trust of the media and of news specifically, and local news even more specifically. Many users trust that local news source. So when they see something like, you know, your local hometown newspaper is publishing this article, they give it more credibility than they would give your local political party is publishing this. And there's so much content like that that is, you know, as you say, flooding the zone. And one of the things where I am concerned about the political ad ban that does take effect on the day after Election Day, but those partisan news sources will be, I think, the only partisan actors who are allowed to run political ads.
Which, as you say, creates a massive opportunity and a massive gap in what the regulations are supposed to, well, if you can call them regulations, what the Facebook's rules are supposed to be there for. Before we sort of bring our discussion to an end, Charles, is there anything else that's caught your eye from Alabama this week?
Yeah, indeed, the election. It's the big story that's really dominating the disinformation sphere this week. And as usual, the disinformation side is pretty much led by Donald Trump and concerns around the election. So November 3rd is balloting day, and Trump is out on a campaign tour right now advocating for a win, and specifically a win on Election Day itself. Now, what's bizarre about this is that elections are almost never called on the day, not even in the U.S. Networks will predict the results of an election. That's broadcast networks, and Fox News was famously the first to call the Bush versus Gore election for Bush on election night before it was settled by the courts. But ballot counting always legally continues until every ballot cast has either been counted or discounted. But this isn't what Trump is after here. He's said the following, quote, "Hopefully the few states remaining that want to take a lot of time after November 3rd to count ballots, that won't be allowed by the various courts because, as you know, we're in courts on that." That's the end of his quote. What he's saying there is that he doesn't want mail-in, early voting, and absentee ballots counted. Most votes cast in a polling booth are counted on the day, but votes that come in other ways, they have to be gathered, collated, counted, and so on, and it can take a few days to do that. So why doesn't he want this? Because the thinking goes that folks who most fear coronavirus, that is, folks who don't buy Trump's rhetoric, and let's be detailed here, because the campaign this week actually declared that Trump has defeated the virus, even has his Council on COVID warned of a deadly winter, those folks who don't buy Trump's disinformation about COVID are both the people most likely to vote against him and most likely to do so through absentee balloting. That also goes for folks of color. Trump has been mouthing off about gathering an army of poll watchers, and the suggestion here is that it will be an army of paramilitary insurgents to watch the polls without masks. Now, there's a website where people can sign up for Trump's army as well, so it's not just him shooting from the hip. This will likely intimidate anyone who outwardly fits the profile of a Biden voter. So just to be clear about the law in the U.S., the election is decided once all precincts return their ballot results, not on election day. And these results do not have to be delivered that day, whatever Trump may say. So it's going to be a pretty interesting November here.
Absolutely. And I mean, the polls, although they put Joe Biden ahead, I mean, they put Hillary Clinton ahead 4 years ago. And the chances of a Biden landslide look pretty remote. So this could be an election which is still relatively close, and therefore the opportunity to contest that result and to try and persuade others that the election, so let's say if there's a narrow Biden victory, was invalid, that's going to be very tempting to do. And it could be the issues we've discussed in this podcast about political advertising leading up to the poll could be nothing compared to the issues that have faced in the next few weeks.
That's absolutely right. And unless there's a Biden landslide that could be called very early on the night, then it's very unlikely that this thing won't end up in the courts and end up in the streets. And I think voters are going to feel disenfranchised on both sides. This obstinance about not following the rule of law and the mass disinformation that's being poured out around this election really long-term doesn't benefit anybody.
And I mean, Laura, before we draw the podcast to a close, I mean, looking to that post-election period, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about Facebook's rules for the post-ad rules post-polling day and your sort of thoughts on what we might see in the weeks after the election.
Yeah, so Facebook has said that after Election Day, there will be a complete ban on disclosed political ads for some indeterminate period of time. A lot of people are speculating that it will be about a week. I do think that, though, that is going to depend on how quickly the election is decided. I think that, frankly, a lot of people are concerned about a situation of civil unrest. I think that that's not a likely outcome, but it certainly is likely enough that I am worried about it. I think that if that happens, Facebook does not want its advertising to be part of how that is organized and promoted. And I think that if the election is more of a landslide, if it is quieter, that period will be shorter. So we'll see.
From what you said earlier on, though, if let's say the hypothetical scenario is that it looks like Biden's won, but there's still ballots being counted, and the response of Donald Trump's campaign is to say that there's been irregularities that cast the election in doubt, and as in the year 2000, this could all be heading towards the courts. Presumably, in a situation like that, we might see some of these ads that you've been describing that cast doubt on the election integrity and the safeness of democracy and our political institutions. We might see a lot of those sorts of ads being run in that that have already run, being run again in that week after the poll.
Yeah, I mean, that's frankly what I would be worried about. That was why before Facebook announced this ban on post-election ads, I had been calling for that, because I was seeing so much of this stuff and it was so concerning. I think about this in as three potential scenarios. There's the scenario where there is a landslide election in someone's favor. Certainly Joe Biden looks more likely right now. And Trump does not contest the election for whatever reason. If that happens, I think that the political ad ban will be pretty brief and we'll be back to business as usual pretty quickly. I think that there's another case that I think I think there's another case that's really unlikely, where the election is close, where there are a lot of contested states, where maybe there are court decisions going on, where there are election officials who are doing regular press conferences because they need to announce decisions about how they're handling ballots. And all of that leads to civil unrest. I think I'm particularly concerned about Facebook ads in that period, because what might happen might be that partisan actors try to arrange protests, that they try to show up at courthouses, that they try to intimidate election officials. And very often those kinds of events are organized online. They're organized on Facebook. So the idea of Facebook ads encouraging people to attend protests that become riots, where violence happens, that seemed like a scenario that very well could happen and was really concerning. And I think if Facebook thinks that we are in a situation like that, they will not allow political ads to restart. There's a middle scenario that that your other guest was talking about where it really looks like Biden is going to win, that Biden has a strong lead, but there is uncertainty enough that the door is open to Donald Trump contesting the election, but really only a few people are accepting that narrative. Now, if that happens, I really don't know what Facebook would do. I would hope that they would leave political ads switched off, because it only takes a really small number of people to do a lot of harm, to do a lot of harm to our systems by engaging in violence. And I really hope Facebook makes the right call.
Given what you said, though, even if they kept in that scenario the political ads switched off, do you think they can stop ads running that would do the same job?
So Facebook certainly has it within their power to turn off all ads in an extreme scenario. I think one thing that Facebook does not get enough credit for is they did a really good job fighting COVID misinformation. If they really wanted to, I really believe that they could stop the organization of riots, that they could stop militia groups from organizing. It is certainly within their power to do so. And the question just comes, do they recognize the potential for harm, the potential for violence? I think that a lot of people think, and I certainly do as well, Facebook could have done a much better job handling what happened over the summer with Black Lives Matter protests and often counter protests, and the way that some groups who were going to those events explicitly to engage in violence organized on Facebook. Facebook knew that they were organizing. They certainly had the power to stop them, and they did not. And people were hurt. I hope that they take the post-election period more seriously than they took the potential for violence over the summer.
I think absolutely. And it's extraordinary. We sit just a few days away from this polling day, and such a big election it is, but the period after the election could be just as important. So Laura, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast and explaining
My
your
pleasure.
Work that you do, which is so important. And we'll see how things play out in the next few weeks.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Great. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Take care, Damien.
You've been listening to the Infotagem podcast, hosted by me, Damien Collins, featuring Laura Edelson and Charles Creel. It was produced by Lucy and David Dargahi. You can find out more about Infotagem, the independent COVID-19 fact-checking service recommended by Ofcom, and send us examples of disinformation you've seen by visiting our website, infotagem.com, or using hashtag IsolateTheLies on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can also support this show by becoming a Patreon at patreon.com/InfotagemPodcast. Infotagem is a not-for-profit organization, and all the proceeds will go towards the making of this show. Thank you until next time.